నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ. ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవా. రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం కెంటో 9 చాప్టర్ 5 చాప్టర్ ఎంటైటిల్డ్ దుర్వాస్ మునీస్ లైఫ్ స్పైర్డ్ టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 26. అతాంబరీషస్ తనయేషు రాజ్యం సమానశీలేషు విసృజ్య ధీర వనం వివేశాత్మని వాసుదేవే మనోదద్వస్తగుణప్రవాహ. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ అండ్ పర్పోర్ట్ బై హిస్ డివైన్ గ్రేస్ ఎస్ భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామీ శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద్. ట్రాన్స్లేషన్ శ్రీల సుఖదేవ్ గోస్వామి కంటిన్యూడ్. దేర్ ఆఫ్టర్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ హిస్ అడ్వాన్స్డ్ పొజిషన్ ఇన్ డివోషనల్ లైఫ్, మహారాజ్ అంబరీష్, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprastha and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudev. Purport. As a pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarish was liberated in any condition of life. Because, as enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami, a devotee is always liberated. Iha yasya harer dasye karmana manasa gira nikila svapyavastasu jivan mukta sa uchyate. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami thus instructs that if one's only desire is service to the Lord, he is liberated in any condition of life. Maharaj Ambarish was undoubtedly liberated in any condition. But as an ideal king, he accepted the Vanaprastha order of retirement from family life. It is essential for one to renounce family responsibilities and fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudev. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish divided the kingdom among his sons and retired from family life. So I seek the blessings of all the devotees for attempting to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. So today, reading from this 9th canto, 5th chapter, we are almost at the end of this particular pastime of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the pastime of Maharaj Ambarish. So in this particular verse, Sukadev Goswami is narrating that how Maharaj Ambarish no longer desired to live with the material things and he retired from the family life. Then he divided his property among his sons who were equally as qualified as he himself. And in order to concentrate his mind fully upon the Supreme Lord. So, in this particular verse, we see that Maharaj Ambarish is addressed by the word Dheera. In fact, Srila Prabhupada writes in the word-to-word translation, Dheera means the most learned scholar. So just a few days back I was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. So there Srila Prabhupada comments about who is actually the most learned person. Because one may think that most learned scholar means one who knows many books or who knows a lot of knowledge. But Srila Prabhupada gives a different dimension to this particular word, who is actually the most learned scholar. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, so there is a story of Sakshi Gopal. So in that Sakshi Gopal story, So there were two brahmanas, old brahmana and the younger brahmana. The old brahmana was served by the younger brahmana when he was going on the place of, when he was going to the place of pilgrimage. So being very pleased with the services rendered by the young brahmana, the old brahmana promised the young brahmana, he felt grateful to him and he wanted to give his daughter in marriage to the young brahmana. So he promised that to the young brahmana, although young brahmana was reluctant because he felt that such a marriage would not take place because he was from a poor family and he was an uneducated common man. But still, because the young brahmana insisted, the young brahmana told the younger old brahmana that you make the promise in front of the deity, so then your promise will not be broken. So then the story goes, then the both the brahmanas, when they return to their native place, and the old brahmana decides to give his daughter in marriage to the young brahmana, but his family members disagree with his opinion. So they threaten him to commit suicide if he actually gives his daughter in marriage to the young brahmana who was uneducated from a poor family. So then, so when the young brahmana approaches the old brahmana, the old brahmana says that I don't remember, because he was threatened by his son that you just simply say that you don't remember the promise. So because of the family pressure, he says that I don't remember the promise. So then the young brahmana calls all the elderly members in that village, and then he says that this old brahmana gave me a promise that he will give his daughter in marriage to me, but he is not accepting that. Now he is not giving that. So when the young brahmana says that, then old brahmana says that now I remember the promise. But then the son of the old brahmana, he says that this person is actually cheating my father. He went with my father to the place of pilgrimage, and my father carried a lot of money, and he actually stole all the money from my father and by giving him an intoxicant. And then now he is claiming that my father actually promised to give his daughter in marriage to him. So then at that time, the young brahmana says that actually this old brahmana gave the promise in front of the deity. In fact, that old brahmana says, now I remember the promise I made in front of the deity. He says that if the deity actually comes, the young brahmana is saying that the old brahmana made the promise in front of the deity of Gopal in Vrindavan. So now I call the deity as a witness. So nobody can deny the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because the Supreme Lord is accepted as the highest authority. So I call the Lord Gopal as a witness to the promise made by this old brahmana to me. So there Srila Prabhupada says that although this young brahmana, he was from a very poor family and he was an uneducated common man, he had one good qualification. What was that qualification? He believed the Supreme Personality of Godhead has the highest authority, and he accepted the words of the Supreme Lord without hesitation. And he had firm faith in the Lord's consistency. So although this young brahmana, apparently he had no material qualification, but he had firm faith that because the promise was made in front of the Supreme Lord, that he had faith that if he would call the Supreme Lord would come to bear witness to this particular activity. So this was the qualification of the young brahmana. He had actually, he had firm faith that Supreme Lord is the highest authority, and he had firm faith in the Lord's consistency. So then Srila Prabhupada says that a pure devotee who has firm faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most learned scholar and the topmost aristocrat and the richest man in the whole world. So he says that although this person is actually an uneducated person, because he had firm faith in the Supreme Lord, he is actually the most learned person and he's the richest person. So we can see here that Maharaj Ambarish is the most learned scholar. Definitely he was very much learned in the scriptures, but then more than that, he had actually firm faith in the Supreme Lord. Like sometimes one may be very learned, but then we may not have complete faith in the Supreme Lord. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was narrating his experience that once he was going to some university to get some permission for starting a program in the university. So he met a professor who is in charge of the religious studies. So when he went to him, and then he said that we want to start this program, then the professor said, I do not believe that your God is actually God. Because the devotees of Hare Krishna, they accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But this person was a professor of religious studies, was very learned in the, even in Hinduism and many religions of the world. He said that I do not accept that your God is as God, so you cannot start the program. And then Maharaj was arguing with him. Then he said, okay, you go back and tomorrow you come again. And then he came again next day. And then Maharaj was having a debate with him for many hours. After so many hours, the professor said, actually, I do not believe in God. I do not believe even Jesus Christ as the Son of God. So that professor's name was Maybe. So he was narrating this experience to say that sometimes a person may be learned, but then he may not have faith in the scriptures which he has learnt. So here we have to understand Maharaj Ambarish is called as the most learned scholar, but according to Srila Prabhupada, one who has firm faith in the authority of the Supreme Lord is the most learned scholar. So, and another important point in this purport, and also in the verse which Srila Prabhupada talks, is that he is talking about the renunciation of Maharaj Ambarish. So Ambarish Maharaj was such a great devotee that because of his attraction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he actually renounced. In fact, he was already engaged in devotional service completely. In the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami says that he gives examples of devotees who have perfected their life by practicing one of the limbs of the devotional service. There are 9 processes of devotional service, starting with Shravanam, Kirtanam, etc. So he gives examples of devotees who have perfected each limb of devotional service. Like Parishit Maharaj attained perfection by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadev Goswami attained perfection by speaking the glories of the Lord. And then finally he says that Maharaj Ambarish perfected his life by following all the limbs of devotional service. So the special characteristic of Maharaj Ambarish is that he actually engaged in all the limbs of devotional service. He was fully engaged in devotional service. So there, in one sense, there was no need to renounce because he was already engaged in devotional service. But still, it is explained that Maharaj Ambarish renounced his family life in order to concentrate his mind fully upon the Supreme Lord. So one of the points which Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport is that Maharaj Ambarish wanted to set proper example. I want to talk about this particular like aspect of renunciation. Like Maharaj Ambarish here renounced his family life, and we also see other examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam, other kings who actually renounce their life. So recently I was reading this section of Bharat Maharaj from the 5th canto. So in that, at the conclusion of the whole episode of Maharaj Bharat, Shukadeva Goswami is actually glorifying the character of Maharaj Bharat. So he is saying, Yo Dushtya Jan Dara Sutan Suhrud Rajyam Hridis Parsha Jahav Yuvaiva Malavad Uttama Shloka Lalasa. He is saying that in the prime of life, Maharaj Bharat gave up his wife, kingdom, his sons, his wealth, opulence, etc. In fact, he says that like all these things are very difficult to give up for any person, but Maharaj Bharat gave up everything in the prime of his youth because he was attached to serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Uttama Shloka Lalasa. So because he was Maharaj Bharat was very much attracted to the service of the Supreme Lord. And another thing which is mentioned is Bharat Maharaj gave up all these things just like a person gives up stool after evacuating his bowels. So this particular analogy is actually very significant. Although one may think like it may seem, one may feel disgusted to talk about stool, but like Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is elaborating on this particular renunciation of Maharaj Bharat. He's saying that when a person gives up stool, one actually experiences pleasure. That Srila Prabhupada said that there are actually only 2.5 pleasures in the world. One pleasure is in evacuating stool, another pleasure is in passing urine, and rest of all the pleasures come in the all the other pleasures come in the other half. So when a person passes stool, one definitely experiences pleasure. When a person does not pass stool, one experiences pain. And another characteristic which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says is that when a person passes stool, then later when a person remembers that act, he only feels disgust. When a person remembers passing stool, like he only feels disgusted. He doesn't feel, oh, maybe I gave up something which was useful. He doesn't feel like that. He feels disgust. So similarly, here, Maharaj Bharat's renunciation is compared to a person passing stool. Because Bharat Maharaj was thinking that if I do not give up, it will only cause pain to me. If I do not give up these opulences, it will cause pain to me. And he was experiencing pleasure by renouncing all these material opulences. And when he would remember the opulences which he gave up, he did not feel that maybe I gave up something useful. Maybe I did something wrong. Like sometimes when we give up, sometimes after some time we may feel, oh, maybe I made a wrong decision. Maybe I should not have given up my job. I should not have given up this thing. Because we still don't have complete attraction to the Supreme Lord. So because of that, still those material desires are remaining. But Bharat Maharaj's position was so exalted that his renunciation was compared to passing stool, because like when a person passes stool, when a person remembers that, he only feels disgust. He does not feel that, oh, maybe I gave up something useful. So that is why Bharat Maharaj's renunciation is exalted. In fact, in the 18th chapter, Krishna talks about 3 kinds of renunciation. He says that karyam dukkam ityeva yat karma kaya klesha bayatyajet sakritva rajasam tyagam naiva tyaga phalam labet. He talks about renunciation in the mode of passion. He says that when a person renounces out of fear of because of bodily discomfort or out of fear of if I keep this thing, it will cause me so much of pain, it will cause me so many anxiety, so better let me give up. So if a person renounces out of bodily discomfort or out of fear, then it is considered to be renunciation in the mode of passion. Or at least for most of us, at least for myself, we can say that it is like whatever we renounce a little bit, it is mostly in the mode of passion. And Krishna says that such renunciation in the mode of passion will not bear the fruits of renunciation. Sakritva rajasam tyagam naiva tyagam phalam labet. It will not give the fruits of renunciation. And then he says, what is renunciation in the mode of goodness? He says that karyam ityeva yat karma niyatam kriyate arjuna sangam tyaktva phalam chaiva satyaga satviko mata. When a person renounces thinking that it is to be done in the mode of a duty, it niyatam kriyate arjuna, it has to be done, and without attachment to the fruits of the action, such renunciation is in the mode of goodness. So at the most, when a person renounces, in our case it is either in the mode of passion or at the most it may be in the mode of goodness. But Bharat Maharaj's renunciation is exalted because when a person in this world, many person may renounce something, but then when a person renounces something but without having complete attraction to the Supreme Lord, such renunciation cannot be compared to giving up stool. But Bharat Maharaj's renunciation was compared to a person who actually gives up stool. Because his renunciation was exalted because he had attraction, he had full attraction to the Supreme Personality of God. So then Shukadeva Goswami says, Yo Dushtyajan Shriti Suta Swajanartha Daran Prartyam Shriyam Suravarai Sadayava Lokam. So Bharat Maharaj gave up earth, his whole kingdom, because he was emperor of the whole planet earth. Kshiti Suta, he gave up his sons, wife, and he gave up his opulences, which were desired by even the demigods. And the nature of material opulence, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, the nature of material opulence is material opulence will tell a person, please do not actually accept the path of renunciation because it will cause so much of pain to your body. So please do not give up. So the material opulence, dayava loka, material opulences were cast, would cause nice glances upon the person. But Maharaj Bharat, although had such opulences, he gave up everything in the prime of his youth. Because he was attracted to he was attached to serving the Supreme Personality of God. So Srila Prabhupada writes a very important point, because I found it very inspiring. Srila Prabhupada says that this verse confirms that Krishna is all attractive. How does it confirm? Because usually when a person renounces something which is actually desired by the people of the world, usually people would ask such a person, maybe is it that you got some frustration in your life? Is it because you had some frustration in some love affair? Or is it because that you got some frustration in your business? Or is it because that your family members were causing so much of pain to you? Or is it because that your business ended in failure? So people think that whenever a person renounces, like people think maybe he could not achieve something in his material life, so that is why he renounced, maybe because he got some frustration. But here, in the case of Bharat Maharaj, he was in the prime of youth, and he had the whole kingdom, he was the emperor of the whole world. His body was completely fit. He had the chaste, submissive wife, and he had such wonderful sons. And he had so much of wealth that it was even desired by the demigods. But still he renounced. That means the reason is he was attracted to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because he was attracted to the qualities, pastimes, and the qualities, pastimes, and form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because of his superior attraction to the Supreme Lord, he gave up everything. So this proves that Krishna is all attractive. So this is the exemplary character of Maharaj Bharat. And Shukadeva Goswami also warns. He says that just like a fly sometimes imitates Garuda, flying like Garuda. He says that just like a fly cannot imitate Garuda. Similarly, he says that kings of this world should not imitate the character of Maharaj Bharat. He says that one cannot even desire, one should not even desire to imitate even within his mind, what to speak of imitating in the actions of Maharaj Bharat. He is warning, he says that one should not even desire to imitate in one's mind about performing the activities of Maharaj Bharat. So we can see here that how great kings like Maharaj Bharat, Maharaj Ambarish, because of their superior attraction to the Supreme Lord, actually they gave up actually everything. So this is actually the, when a person does not, although a person may give up sometimes because of out of bodily discomfort, out of fear, but if a person does not develop attraction to the Supreme Lord, then again one will go back to the previous things one actually gives up. So this was also explained in the fifth canto when Jadabharat was talking about this forest of material enjoyment. When Shukadeva Goswami is explaining that particular analogy, he says that just like sometimes a plowman who actually plows the land, every year he actually plows the land and he removes all the weeds. But still, when he sows the seeds, he sees that again the weeds again come up along with the plants which he actually sows. So this is because the weeds are not completely removed from the earth. So similarly, he says that sometimes a person gives up material sense gratification. Sometimes a person gives up family life or material sense gratification and enters the renounced order. But because the desires, the material desires are not completely uprooted, because they are not completely uprooted, he again goes back to enjoy the material desires. Just like, suppose a pot contains camphor, and you may remove the camphor from the pot, or you may remove the hing from a pot, but still the aroma of that camphor, aroma of that hing will remain. So similarly, one may actually renounce, but if a person does not completely engage in the service of the Supreme Lord, again those material desires will come up. So because of that, again, a person may again go back to the previous things one may actually, one has renounced. So Srila Prabhupada explains in that purport, says that is why it is important to fully engage in the service of the Supreme Lord, fully engage in devotional service. So here, because Maharaj Ambarish was fully engaged in devotional service, he naturally gave up all these things. So in fact, in another particular place in the fifth canto, first chapter, Shukadeva Goswami describes about the renunciation of Swayambhu Manu. So Swayambhu Manu, he was also the emperor of the whole planet Earth. So after installing Priyavrat Maharaj as the king of the planet Earth, by convincing him with the help of Lord Brahma, then Swayambhu Manu retired from his life. So there, the verse actually explains very interestingly. He says that Swayambhu Manu achieved relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires. So Shukadeva Goswami is saying that the material affairs are compared to a ocean of poisonous desires. It is compared to material desires are compared to poisonous ocean. And he is saying the most dangerous, all in the superlative degree, the most dangerous, poisonous, not a puddle of material desire, but ocean of material desires. So Swayambhu Manu, after retiring, he felt relief from the most dangerous, poisonous ocean of material desires. So here, Srila Prabhupada compares Swayambhu Manu with the modern politicians. Says that modern politicians, till the end of his, till 70 years or 80 years, till the point of their death, they want to continue in power. We see in India, there are so many chief ministers, although they are like 80 plus, 70 plus, still they are like hardly, they cannot walk even, they cannot even walk properly, but still they want to continue to remain as a chief minister, etc. But here, Swayambhu Manu, he felt great satisfaction in trying to, after giving up his emperor. And Maharaj Priyavrat was reluctant to actually accept, or was reluctant to become the emperor. So both Swayambhu Manu and Maharaj Priyavrat, they ruled the kingdom with great disinterest, completely unattached to the material affairs. So this is actually the character of the great kings. We see in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so here, another, as I said, another point which Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport is that Ambarish Maharaj was already fully engaged in devotional service. There was no need to give up, because he was already, his mind was fully concentrated in the Supreme Lord. But still, in order to set proper examples, he actually gave up his family life. So this principle of setting proper examples, so that is also actually one of the responsibility of a leader. So you again see in the fourth canto about this character of Prithu Maharaj. So in this Prithu Maharaj, when Prithu Maharaj was enthroned as the emperor, see, he was actually the incarnation of the Supreme Lord. But Lord Brahma and all the demigods, they came, and it is explained that Lord Brahma accepted Prithu Maharaj as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, after examining the body of the Supreme Prithu Maharaj, that he has the symbols which are supposed to be in the body of the Supreme Lord. Only after examining him, he actually accepted him as the incarnation of the Supreme Lord. I think 1 year back, some devotees went to one particular program in which a so-called incarnation of the Supreme Lord, who claimed similar to the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, he came. In fact, when he came, all the traffic was stopped. Then when he came to the one big minister in the government's house, house of that particular minister, the devotees were explaining that how all the ministers and big cricket stars and film stars, they were actually glorifying that particular person as the Supreme Lord. They were offering prayers to him with great reverence. And he was also not rejecting that he is not the Supreme Lord. But here we see in the character of Maharaj Prithu that even demigods like Lord Brahma and other demigods, they did not accept Prithu Maharaj blindly as the incarnation of Supreme Lord. Only after examining, actually they accepted him as the incarnation of Supreme Lord. And after that, we see that even Maharaj Prithu did not, it's explained that after the Maharaj Prithu was glorified by the professional reciters, The Sutas and Magadhas, they started glorifying Prithu Maharaj, his qualities and activities. So there, it's explained that when they started glorifying, Prithu Maharaj said that the qualities, these qualities which you are saying, it is not present in me. I have not manifested. So when you are not seeing the qualities, why are you glorifying me? When the professional reciters, they said, but we cannot exist without glorifying. Our profession is to actually glorify somebody. So we cannot exist without glorifying. So Prithu Maharaj said, then if that is the case, do it for somebody else. So why do you have to glorify me? So you can glorify somebody else who has those qualities. Then the professional reciter said, then what fault do you have if we glorify, if we praise you? So what are you afraid of if we praise you? But Prithu Maharaj says, actually there is no fault for me, but I fear for you, because if you glorify somebody who does not have those qualities, you will only incur sinful reactions. So I fear for you, because you will get sinful reactions. Then the professional reciters, they say, but then we know that in future you will manifest these qualities. We know that in future you will manifest these qualities. That is why we are actually glorifying this. We are glorifying you. And Prithu Maharaj said, but then you glorify when it appears in the future. Do not do it right now. And even when you glorify in the future, or even when you glorify now, do it indirectly, but not directly. So when you glorify somebody who does not manifest those qualities, it only causes embarrassment to that particular person. Then in response to that, the sutras, they say that, but then what can we do? We are inspired by the sages who are present in the assembly. So they have inspired us to glorify your qualities. That is why we are glorifying you. So the Prithu Maharaj says, but then that is useless. You can glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Instead of glorifying me, you can glorify the qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And the Sutras and Mahagadas, the professional reciters, they say, but then you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in response to that, Prithu Maharaj says that, how could an intelligent person competent enough to possess such exalted qualities allow his followers to praise him if he did not actually have them? Praising a man by saying that if he were educated, he might have become a great scholar or great personality is nothing but a process of cheating. Suppose if you glorify a person, if only you were educated, you would have such and such degrees. So if you are glorifying somebody like that, it is actually an insult to such a person. But a foolish person does not understand it, that he is actually insulting me. So in this way, Prithu Maharaj is actually, he is not willing to actually take the glorification from the professional reciters. So we see here that both the demigods and the Prithu Maharaj, they are setting proper example. The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, they did not accept Prithu Maharaj as the incarnation of the Supreme Lord without examining him. And Prithu Maharaj is setting a proper example, but not by not willing to accept the glorification, because he has not manifested these qualities. Because he knew in the future there will be cheating incarnations of the Supreme Lord, or cheating so-called gods. They would accept glorification from their followers, although they do not possess the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Like this, the so-called incarnations who came recently to Bombay. So we see here, so this principle of actually for setting proper example. And another particular principle we can see is, here it's explained that the sons of Maharaj Ambarish, they were equally as qualified as Maharaj Ambarish. So it is said that a test of a great leader is that he should be able to produce at least one of his follower equally as qualified as himself. A test of a great leader is at least he should be able to produce one follower who is actually equally as qualified as himself. I say when they speak this Ritvik philosophy, when they say that so Prabhupada is the only guru and there is no guru after Srila Prabhupada, that means they are actually indirectly criticizing Srila Prabhupada. They are saying that so Prabhupada is not fit enough to produce even one person who can become a guru, who can lead, who can take the responsibility of accepting so many disciples. It is actually indirect criticism of Srila Prabhupada, although they claim to be actually following Srila Prabhupada, they are actually criticizing Srila Prabhupada. So we see, if we see in the character of great kings, great devotees in Srimad Bhagavatam, they were able to produce some followers, at least one follower or more followers, who are actually as qualified as themselves. Like Rishabhadev, his son was Maharaj Bharat. And Maharaj Bharat produced so many qualified sons. And Prithu Maharaj produced so many qualified sons. So Maharaj Ambarish sons were also, they were as qualified as himself. And lastly, I just want to conclude this one important point, that like sometimes when a person does not follow certain rules and regulation, so we may tend to criticize such people. Like there is one very important verse in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the Navayogendras are speaking to Maharaj Nimi. They say that Yan Astaya Naro Rajan Na Pramadyeta Karhichit Davan Nimilya Vanetre Na Skalen Na Patetiha. He says that one who accepts this process of devotional service will never blunder on this path. So even when a person, when a person runs with his eyes closed, he will never stumble nor fall. So Navayogendras, they are glorifying the process of devotional service. But if a person accepts this process of devotional service with full with whole heart, then he will never actually stumble on this path. He will never fall. Even when a person runs with eyes closed, he will never stumble or he will never fall on this path. So this that means this particular verse says, that means running with two eyes closed, that basically refers to, the two eyes refers to the Shruti and the Smriti scriptures. That means that even if a person is not learned in the scriptures, but if a person sincerely engages in devotional service, he will be guided from within by the Supreme Lord in such a way that he will never stumble on this path. He will follow all the rules and regulations perfectly. So this particular verse is actually sometimes taken by the Sahajiyas as an excuse for their not following the rules and regulations. So Sahajiyas are basically so-called followers of devotional service, who claim that they follow the spontaneous path of devotional service, but they actually do not follow the basic rules and regulations of devotional service. Like they may not follow, they may not chant the holy names in the beads, they may not follow Ekadashi Vrata, or they may engage in illicit affairs, they may engage in intoxication. But then they will say that actually Lord has actually inspired from within. So that is why we are following this particular spontaneous path. And there are so many, we may not see Sahajiyas in Bombay, but there are so many so-called pseudo-religionists. So many so-called religionists, they say that actually God has inspired from within to perform devotional service in this way, which may be against the rules and regulations of scriptures. So they may quote this particular verse or the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Tesham Satata Yuktanam Bhajatam Preeti Purvakam. Krishna says that I give the intelligence from within to follow the path. So they may quote these verses to justify their not following the rules and regulations. So I'll just briefly describe this purport. Maybe when you go home, you can read this particular purport, 11th canto, 2nd chapter, 35th verse. So Hridayananda Maharaj quotes from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. He makes a very important point. He says that this spontaneous revelation by the Supreme Lord from within to a sincere devotee, it is not meant to alter the eternal process of devotional service. But it is only meant to give a supplementary facility to a sincere devotee who does not have knowledge of the scriptures. Sometimes a sincere devotee who may be illiterate, who may not have knowledge of the scriptures, but he is fully engaged in the process of devotional service. So in order to guide the devotee, Lord reveals from within as to how to execute the devotional service according to the rules and regulations. So this spontaneous revelation by the Supreme Lord is not meant to alter the eternal process of devotional service, but it is meant to give a supplementary facility to a sincere devotee from within. So the Lord is eternal, and the living entity's constitutional position is eternal. That is eternally the servant of the Supreme Lord. And the process by which a living entity establishes its constitutional position with the Supreme Lord, that is also eternal. That is, the process of devotional service is also eternal. So when a Lord actually guides from within to a sincere devotee, he will not alter the eternal process of devotional service. As the so-called Sahajiyas and the pseudo-religionists, they claim, they actually justify their not following the rules and regulations by saying that Lord has actually inspired from within. There is no need to follow these rules. But Lord will never alter the process of devotional service, because the process of devotional service is eternal. So this special revelation by the Supreme Lord, given by the Supreme Lord to a sincere devotee, it is only meant to give the scriptural knowledge by another process. It is not meant to alter what is actually given in the scriptures. So Lord will not, when a Lord actually inspires a sincere devotee who is illiterate from within, he will give the same scriptural knowledge. He will give the same rules and regulations which are mentioned in the scriptures from within. He will not actually alter the rules and regulations which are mentioned in the scriptures. So that is important. And finally, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur makes an additional point, which is also very relevant to this particular verse. But sometimes, because the Prakrita Sahajiyas and pseudo-religionists, they may not follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures, or rules and regulations of devotional service, like practicing Ekadashi, observing Ekadashi, and different chanting in the beads, etc. So these rules are absolutely important. But then there are rules which are to be performed according to the Varnashram principles. So these rules are secondary. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that sometimes devotees, they may be following the basic principles of Bhakti Yoga. They may follow the basic principles of Bhakti Yoga, like hearing, chanting, etc. But they may not be able to follow the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma. So when we see devotees not able to follow the rules and regulations of Varnashram Dharma, one should not criticize such devotees. Like, for example, in Kali Yuga, according to the rules of Varnashram Dharma, one should enter Brahmachari Ashram, Grahastha Ashram, and then one should retire to take Vanaprastha Ashram, and then take Sannyas Ashram. But in Kali Yuga, one may not be able to take to Vanaprastha Ashram and then take to Sannyas Ashram. But then one should not criticize such devotees, because they are actually following the primary principles of devotional service: hearing, chanting, remembering, worshipping the deities, etc. But they may not be following the secondary rules, like following the principles of Varnashram Dharma. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Prakrita Sahajiyas are the pseudo-religionists. When they do not follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, they should be criticized. But the sincere devotees who are following the primary principles of devotional service, but when they do not follow the secondary principles, like following the Varnashram Dharma, they should not be criticized. So in this way, here we see that Maharaj Ambarish, that he set a proper example by renouncing the family affairs in order to completely dedicate himself to the Supreme Lord. But although one may not be able to follow in that way, but one may not be able to exactly do the same activities, one should actually follow in the footsteps by basically increasing one's devotional service of the Supreme Lord. So I'll quickly summarize. So today we talked about this particular word. Maharaj Ambarish is called the most learned scholar. So who is actually the most learned scholar? From the Chaitanya Charitamrit. Then we talked about the renunciation of great kings from the Srimad Bhagavatam. We talked about renunciation of Maharaj Bharat. And we talked about the renunciation of Swayambhu Manu. And then we talked how one should not even try to imitate the activities of Maharaj Bharat even in one's own mind. And then we talked about this principle of setting proper examples from this character of Maharaj Ambarish. That how we glorified Maharaj Prithu Maharaj, how the demigods and Prithu Maharaj, both actually, demigod did not blindly accept Prithu Maharaj as the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, nor did Prithu Maharaj blindly accept all the glorification of the professional reciters. And then we talked about this principle of following the rules and regulation. The Prakrita Sagajiyas not following the rules and regulation, they should be condemned. But the devotees who are following the primary rules of devotional service but not able to follow the secondary principles of Varnashram Dharma, like taking to the Vanaprastha Ashram, Sannyasi Ashram, they should not be criticized because they are following the primary items of devotional service. So we explained from this particular verse in the 11th canto, which says that the Lord, when he actually reveals from within to a sincere devotee, it is actually it is not meant to alter the eternal process of devotional service, but it is only to give a supplementary facility to a sincere devotee. So it is basically another method to give the scriptural knowledge to a sincere devotee who is actually not learned. But it is not meant to alter what is actually given in the scriptures. And then we talked about how this principle, a leader is one who is able to produce at least one follower equally qualified as himself. So here Maharaj Ambarish, all his sons were actually equally qualified as himself. I'm sorry that actually wave and beyond my time. I'll stop here. Rantaran Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.